You're listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast, and I'm Alistair Reid. There is absolutely no escaping the relentless drive of innovation that affects journalism and the wider media. Now, given my position as editor of journalism.co.uk and the focus we have on that crossover between tech and news, I would probably be out of a job if I said anything different, and rightly so. The selective deafness of some news organisations to the impact of technology on their output has put many out of business, and the new startups who embrace technology are the ones taking their place. But there are exceptions. There are cases of journalists and news organisations who've been around the block and got the scars to show it and are experimenting in the way they work to innovate, to evolve and to survive. This week, we're talking about News Labs. And just this last Monday, The Guardian announced that it is partnering with the Knight Foundation to set up a team specifically for innovating in how mobile technology can play an even deeper role in today's journalism. I caught up with Rachel White, the Director of Philanthropic and Strategic Projects at Guardian News Media, to hear about the new News Lab and the thinking behind it.
Clearly, as a global media company, we have a very substantial interest in mobile. 70% of the world's population will soon be on mobile devices. We know that our readers are increasingly consuming the news on mobile devices. But we also feel like there's still a lot that we don't know about mobile and how readers want to consume news through their mobile devices and what the potential of it was. And so as we had begun to think about this, coincidentally, the Knight Foundation and their president, Alberto Mbarguin, had come to The Guardian in London and started a conversation with us. And together we constructed the idea for this lab, with the idea being that it might be possible to make a very big jump forward in the way The Guardian, but all of media, is able to think about consumption of news through mobile devices if we dedicated a team to it who focused exclusively on that and weren't distracted by all the rest of newsmaking on a day-to-day basis.
As well as coming up with new ideas for stories, presentation, and distribution, the new Guardian News Lab will look at recent and existing stories to think about how they might have had a better treatment for mobile. One example is with The Counted, a recent digital project to document deaths caused by law enforcement in the US.
It's such a brilliant project, and it's had so much impact already, and yet the thing that we don't know, I think it's safe to assume that a lot of people are consuming The Counted on their mobile devices, but we haven't thought about how they would consume it more or contribute more to the story or take more steps after they read this. I mean, we don't know. It's been so impactful just the way it is, as something that lives on a desktop and translates just as it is onto mobile. But there is so much more potential for how a project like that could be engaging and draw readers in and pull in extra readers. And that's the kind of stuff we'll want to play around with.
There are 7 or 8 jobs going in the project for an editorial and a product lead, she said, and reporters and developers. But the most important point is not how many or what structure they might take, but where they will sit in relation to the rest of the organization.
They'll be living right within the newsroom. They're not going to be sort of hived off. And while part of it will be original reporting specifically for the project and with reporters who are thinking exclusively about sort of how the news that they're reporting on will be consumed on mobile, the whole team will also be leveraging the rest of the content that's coming out of the newsroom on a day-to-day basis and also experimenting with that. So it's, it's its own thing, but it lives right in the middle of the newsroom in a way the learning should be wider and broader that way.
That, at least, is the plan. Jackie Mayer works in the News Lab at the BBC, and before that, the New York Times, so she has first-hand experience of how this can play out in practice. And it's in that innovation Goldilocks zone in the newsroom, not too far from the news desk to be frozen out, but not too close to get sucked in by the gravity of the news cycle, and that's where the best work can happen, because it has that flexibility.
I've seen labs where you end up like just coming up with prototypes without even talking to anyone in the newsroom, without knowing like how the people work. So you want to be somewhere in the middle.
The News Lab is like the middle ground between the BBC's full research and development department and the newsroom. So she says it works well. But that doesn't mean every idea will run smoothly.
When I was still pretty new to the BBC, I was sitting near the politics team. And they were talking about how the visual journalism team wanted to come up with these, or were going to come up with these different cards that would be on the website, that each card would be some combination of a political party, an issue, and then a region that the BBC broadcasts in. So, you know, for instance, you could have conservatives, healthcare, and Wales, or something like that. When you factored in like all the different combinations of political party and location and all this, anyway, it was going to be about 600 different cards.
The visual journalism team wanted these cards to be dynamic in that they updated as the stories developed, but also shareable by readers. So Jackie came up with a way to automatically take a screenshot of the cards, but she ended up having to spend far too much time actually putting it into practice. Other projects have fared better, though.
I ended up doing a lot of work with some of the other people in the news labs on the audience engagement team and working with the BBC's already existing linked data platform, which is in part the system that journalists use to tag content.
This became an automatic, digitized way of understanding the balance of the BBC's reporting around the election. And she's continuing to look at ways of tagging articles and story elements and spearheading a project on structured journalism and collaborating with different groups to see how story elements can be better tagged at news organizations so they can be reused and restructured for other pieces of content. The key, though, to making all of this work is communication. The Guardian and the BBC are obviously standout cases with the resources and the scale to employ people like Jackie or get the funding from the Knight Foundation.
Very few organizations can even employ like one or two news app or hacker journalist sorts of people, you know, let alone have a lab, right? I saw the Guardian announcement. It's really exciting for them that they're going to have that lab. But, I mean, in terms of, like, you know, either the way you work, your process, discipline, or whatever, it's like, first, if you can, get involved in whatever the community is locally to you, whether there's a hackers in your town. Then, if there, you know, if you can get to events that, you know, I think a lot of the events that I go to, whether in America, NICAR, the annual conference, or like I just went to and I saw you in Perugia at the International Journalism Festival. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, not everyone can afford to fly to Italy, but if you're already kind of local, I think the Ryanair tickets were about 40 quid or so, you know, and the event was free. You can do stuff like that. If you can't get to the places, you can get involved on the mailing list or through social media or Facebook or whatever and get talking to people in the field or just even like try to keep up. It's like, you know, if you read Journalism.co.uk or the Journalism Tools or, you know, there's so many resources online now to just see like where the industry is going. To be open to that sort of stuff. If you're a reporter and, you know, you're at a company that has some programmers, whether they're in the newsroom or more likely they're not, talk to them. See, you know, I think a lot of people who are, you know, whether they're programmers or designers, they're working at a news organization in the first place and they're not in the newsroom. The odds are pretty likely, I'd say, that they're interested in news because why else would they be there, right? So just trying to, like, find like-minded individuals, I guess, where you are.
Hacks and Hackers is probably the biggest network in the world for people trying to meet and discuss this cross-section between news and technology and come up with ideas to drive it forward. Founder Bert Herman told me how it got started.
Hacks and Hackers was founded about more than 5 years ago, and actually this came after I had just finished a Knight Fellowship at Stanford after many years working as a journalist with the Associated Press. And I really kind of felt, being there in the heart of Silicon Valley, that we needed to be talking to each other, basically, that, you know, as storytelling evolves, as we're using more technology, different forms of technology, mobile, web, whatever comes next, that we need to involve the technologists who are doing the work to create these platforms, to create tools for these platforms, to create media on these platforms, that this can't just be you do your story and throw it over the wall to the tech guys to make it look pretty, but really you have to fundamentally rethink from the start of the process how you're going to tell a story, what you're going to do, and how that all comes together. And technologists should be involved at the start of that process. So I started this meetup group.
Aaron Pilhofer, who was then at the New York Times, but now is executive editor for digital at The Guardian, was having similar ideas at the time, as did Rich Gordon at Northwestern University. And so together with journalist and coder Chris Wu, the group founded Hacks and Hackers. With the help of some funding from the Google News Lab, which announced a whole load of projects and collaborations this week, Hacks Hackers has also launched its own Connect project to fund one-day events and facilitate that process of connectivity. The key to all of this, though, of journalists and technologists working together to push the industry forward, is communication and understanding.
One of the things that really is core to what we do is simply respect, is getting people to kind of respect and value what the other side does. So that both means journalists respecting code and technology as a true craft, and that technologists have something to say about storytelling and how things should be presented and aren't just like, you know, people who you throw stuff at and they do what you tell them to, but really should be part of the collaboration and process of this. And also the other way that technologists kind of appreciate the craft of creating a great story and great writing and photography and whatever else goes into that, and digging into the hard stories, getting information. I mean, that's hard work too. So really we kind of at our heart just want to simply get people to understand each other a bit more and respect each other for what they bring to the table. You need both of these things, and both sides kind of need to understand the other in order to work together. And not every journalist is going to become a coder, but they should understand, you know, a bit about what goes into making a website or an app and how that all works together so that they can work together.
This does bring up the question of the digital newsroom unicorn, those people who have both editorial and development skills to a high degree, and there are some people in the industry who bang the drum of journalists learning to code whenever they get the chance. Jackie and Bert both had the same thing to say on this subject.
You hear lots that everybody needs to learn how to code, or all journalists need to learn how to code, and then, you know, to what degree do they need to learn how to code is another debate. Personally, I think it's great. If someone wants to learn how to code, cool. I'm not going to dissuade someone from doing that. But I think more importantly, we need to learn what's possible in the mediums that we're working in, whether that's, you know, coding for an iPhone or Android or the web, because those are even very different. You know, you don't need to know, like, how to make, like, something that responds to swipes or touch gestures, right? You just need to know that that's possible. I think that's far more important. Just, like, being aware, again, I feel like a broken record, but I think that's more important.
I think you need to concentrate on doing what you love and you care about. I mean, if that's writing long-form magazine pieces, that's great, and you should really specialize and try to be the best at that you can possibly be. If you don't really care about it, if you're not truly passionate about something, you're never going to put in the work to become great at it, right? And you see that with coders too, right? People who started when they were kids building websites for their, you know, elementary school or whatever it is, and they've just been doing it for years and they can't stop doing it because they love doing it. So I don't think you can force people to do things they shouldn't do, but I just do think it is important that you be aware of what the other side does, and that means journalists knowing some of the basics about maybe HTML and CSS and JavaScript. You know, not that you're going to become a masterful front-end developer, but just to kind of have a basic idea of what's an API, what could I do with different websites' data, if that's something that's related to your work. And I think for the technology side, I do think we've seen, you know, lots of developers and venture capitalists, people in technology, see the value of writing and getting their thoughts out there in a way that they can share them with other people. The explosion in podcasting we've seen recently, I mean, now it seems like everybody has a podcast, and really people do see the value in content and building an audience and a community around what they do. So I think both sides are learning from each other.
Communication and community are central in being able to move forward here, and really they're central to what both sides of the digital journalism coin are doing anyway. Journalists are nothing without their sources, news organizations are nothing without their readers, and despite the caricature of the lone hacker typing away in the basement lit only by the dim blue glow of their laptop monitor reflecting off a bottle of Mountain Dew, developers' communities are huge, full of meetups and hackathons and conferences and other events. Some of Jackie's work has been in actively getting people from the newsroom to speak to the more technical guys and acting as that bridge, with positive results.
We're bringing in some people from the newsroom and showing them this, and it was amazing, actually. They looked at it, and they were like, wow, could this actually work for news? And just, you know, knowing who the people in the newsroom are who might react like that, of course, was one of the key, like, things, right? But once you get those people talking to, you know, some of like the more engineering kind of focus, like, or linked data, like kind of hardcore people in R&D, and just trading ideas back and forth, you see that there's a lot of common ground there where, you know, if you had asked them individually maybe before, they might not have thought so, but, you know, just basically like being open, working with people that might not be in your exact line of work, just seeing where you can meet.
So it is worth finding local contacts that might be open to these ideas, or people in your organization. And there's no shame in starting small. Bert says he didn't have any resources when he started Hacks Hackers, or when he built Storify, the storytelling platform for social media that is now widely used across the industry.
We just kind of went out there and started doing stuff. And you know, you're afraid to put something out there new. That takes a lot of courage. But once you do that, I think you find yourself kind of rallying to your cause.
This kind of openness in sharing ideas and experiments is central to what The Guardian is doing as well.
We actually feel like there's a big advantage and benefit for us in being in open and sharing with the rest of the news community and also bringing them into the conversation. Indeed, when we really sort of lift this up off of the ground, in a very, you know, once we've staffed up a bit and once we've put, you know, sort of a lot of structure in place around how we'll execute this, you know, in from our own sort of internal governance structure, the very sort of the first big launch of it is in New York in either September or October. And that's a workshop. And we will bring together our partners from media and commercial teams and product and researchers, our research partner, Pew, and really sort of hash through this. But we think that there's as much to be learned from others as from our, you know, from what we learn independently within the project. And that has to be part of our findings.
That doesn't mean it's going to be easy, though. There are different mindsets and work processes in the two fields, but it goes back to that same thinking of being open and respectful to who and what is involved.
It's tricky to work together. I mean, I saw this actually myself working to build Storify, because as a journalist, you're kind of very much driven by the deadline and the hot story and jumping on that when it's happening and kind of riding the wave. And in technology, it's much more about building a platform and something lasting and thinking through the different cases and what could happen so that you're prepared for, you know, what might go wrong in edge cases and all these things. So, I mean, it's kind of a different way of thinking. So I think for journalists, it does require kind of taking a step back more than they do in the daily deadline rush. I mean, that can be a valuable skill when you are kind of racing to fix something quickly. Like occasionally you do need to do that, but really kind of taking a step back from what you do and having a longer view. I think that's part of the reason that a lot of news companies have had trouble innovating, because you're just so driven by what's on the front page the next day and you're not thinking, you know, do we actually need a front page at all?
Yes, it might be a risk, but what is the alternative?
If any of us in media are not taking big risks, then we're going to miss the opportunities to actually be part of the media in the future.
You've been listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast.